Consort. That could be it. I flipped to the right page and skimmed the story. Nope. This was a romantic tale about a young witch meeting her great love just before she reached the dreaded age of 25. A little too close to home right now, and not at all useful. I put that one back and moved on. I'd paged through at least 10 books when I found it. A Twisted Consorting, the title said. My pulse hitched as I found its starting point. The story was about an orphaned witch taken in as a girl by a sadistic, low-family couple who wanted to use her for their own ends. The man dissolved his consorting with his wife and persuaded the orphan to partner with him. Fine, fine, none of that related to my situation. Then I reached the part where the woman of the couple conducted the consorting ceremony for her former partner and her adopted daughter. When the glyphs were drawn, she drew a dagger through the symbol of the spark. Then, as she drew the energies of the consorting between the two, she twisted the ties back on themselves, locking the girl's spark to her husband's will. Her magic kindled, but only with his blessing could she call on it. And if he demanded and she tried to refuse, the pain of a dagger's cut would slice through her chest. I lowered the book, my stomach churning. It was too easy to imagine being trapped like that, forced to bend my magic to someone else's will. But it was just a folktale. Meredith had said they weren't true. Of course, Celestine hadn't been sure what she wanted to do was possible either. That was why she'd gone to Master Cortland in the first place. An icy prickle ran down the center of me as my gaze lingered on the story's title. A Twisted Consorting. On an impulse, I flipped back to the front of the book. This one's title was Witching Tales of the Yesteryear. Something about those words felt far too familiar. My fingers tightened around the book. I nudged the other volumes on that shelf so the gap wasn't obvious, then, tucking that one under my arm, I hurried to my bedroom.
"Did you find it?" Phil said. "Do you know what that witch has up her sleeve?"
"Maybe," I said. I'd wanted answers, but now I almost hoped I hadn't found one. I shut my bedroom door, locked it, and retrieved my prepaid phone from beneath the bookshelves. My nerves jittered as I brought up the notes I'd saved from Seth's now-deleted text. The second I laid eyes on them, my heart sank. There it was. The reference right next to Master Cortland's note about the dagger. Via WTOTY/ATC. The letters couldn't be clearer. Witching Tales of the Yesteryear. A Twisted Consorting. I didn't know where he'd gotten the other ideas for Celestine's binding, but that one had come from a copy of the same book I held in my hands right now. "She wants to bind my magic to Derek's will," I said. My voice shook as the words spilled out. "So I can't use it without his permission. And if he wants me to use it, I have to." Philomena's eyes widened.
"And she can accomplish that?"
Master Cortland told her he thought it would be possible. My imaginary best friend made a disgruntled sound. She stalked from the bookcase to the end of the bed and back, her skirts rustling against the floor.
"And what do you think your fiancé knows about all of this? A spell like that wouldn't do her much good if he didn't agree to use it."
That question jabbed even deeper than my initial revelation had. I dragged in a breath, a burn forming behind my eyes. "You're right. He has to know." I pressed my hand to my temple. My consort-to-be was conspiring with my stepmother to take control over my magic. Just because he wanted to? That was so much worse than simply not liking me all that much. You'd have to hate a person to do that to them, wouldn't you? Was there any possible explanation? Celestine had sent that money to his family. She could have told him anything. Maybe he thought the binding would help them somehow. It didn't really matter what the explanation was, though. One thing was perfectly clear. The words popped out. "I can't marry him. I can't take him as a consort, not if he was willing to be part of this, for any reason."
"Well, fine. I didn't think you should marry him anyway. Call off the engagement."
Phil let out a little cheer. "And then what? I don't have anyone else. I only have 2 months left before I turn 25. Could Dad arrange a new consort for me that quickly?
one I'd be able to tolerate spending my life with when it had taken so long just to find Derek. A few of the tears that had been threatening spilled out. Phil, I think I'm going to lose my magic. The power I'd been training my whole life to take, the spark I'd been longing to feel light inside me since I was a little girl, I'd lose that. I'd lose my home. A magicless witch couldn't inherit. The estate would go to one of my stepsisters, I guessed. I didn't even know where I'd go. A magicless witch was nothing. Worse than nothing. No, Phil said firmly. You're not losing anything. I refuse to allow it. We just have to consider the situation thoroughly. There's nothing to consider, I said. I need a witching man as my consort to complete that magical bond and show my commitment, or my spark will never light. I paused, a memory tugging at me. Except maybe it had lit. Just a little, once already. With a man who had nothing to do with witching at all. 15. Rose. I knew how a seduction was supposed to work. I'd read enough of those scenes in the copious novels I'd devoured. Put on some slinky clothes that showed off however much cleavage was just slightly inappropriate for the time period. Primp hair and dab on some alluring perfume. Then head over to that guy, ready to knock his socks off. What those books hadn't generally mentioned was how awkward you could end up feeling, wearing clothes both fancier and more revealing than your usual casual blouses and jeans, or how easy it was to overdo it on the perfume when you pretty much never wore the stuff. After several changes and a lot of hasty wrist scrubbing, I was here, standing in the stairwell beneath Seth's apartment, one of the two that sat on top of his dad's hardware store, smelling mostly of my usual soap, but at least I didn't smell bad. The silky V-neck blouse and somewhat more modest skirt I'd finally settled on still felt out of place on me, but nowhere near as out of place as the dresses I'd considered, so I'd call that a win. But I was having an awful lot of trouble convincing my legs to climb those stairs. "I look okay, right?" I said to Philomena. She tipped her head with an amused smile. "You look lovely, Rose. My little girl, all grown up." I rolled my eyes at her and she giggled. Then she swatted me with her fan. "Well, are you going up there or not?" I dragged in a breath. "Do you think I'm doing the right thing?" "Darling, I think the only one who can answer that is you." "I have to know. I can't make any decisions if I don't know." "Well, there you go. Consider how many men I've kissed just to find out if I found the experience worthwhile. You've got much more urgent reasons than I ever did." Even though she was only in my head, it was comforting having her there with me, which was why it stung a little for me to say, "All right, I think you'd better give us a little, privacy."
"Why, of course. A lady wouldn't intrude."
She fluttered her fan and her eyelashes. "But I do want to hear all the details when I see you next." I was doing this. Yes, I was. One step and then another, and then another. My hand settled over my opposite wrist, where I'd wrapped today's ribbon. Green, for Seth's steadiness and strength. I could use some of that for myself right now. Oh, yeah. My heart thumped faster. Those stairs passed by far too quickly. Just like that, I was stopping in front of the apartment door. He was going to think I'd gone crazy. Or pity me, or... No, I'd seen the way he looked at me when we were alone in Master Cortland's house. I might not be experienced, but I was pretty sure I could recognize desire when it was written all over someone's face. When I felt it echoing through me at the same time. I raised my hand and knocked. At first, there was nothing on the other side. Then hesitant footsteps brushed across the floor. Seth eased open the door. He was wearing glasses I'd never seen before. Rounded, rectangular frames. A glint of glass over his gray-green eyes. Eyes that were blinking at me in confusion.
"Rose?"
he said.
"Why are you... Did something happen? Are you all right?"
I started, and my throat closed up.
The sense of just how not all right my life was right now hit me in a way it somehow hadn't before.
"Come in,"
Seth said, guiding me with a hand on my shoulder.
"Sit down. If there's anything I can do to help, you know I will."
I didn't think he was the slightest bit prepared for the kind of help I was going to ask for. But first things first. Everything in Seth's apartment looked as if it had been chosen for function or a comfort to overstyle. Nothing on the walls except a set of coat hooks in the hall and a pot rack in the kitchen. A set of weights stood in one corner. The boxy sofa and tables filled the living room space efficiently. The rug was the perfect beige to swallow just about any stain. But when I sank onto one end of the sofa, I found the cushions were enjoyably cushy. I shifted my weight, settling right in. Seth took the other end of the sofa, turning to face me. I couldn't help staring at his face. "When did you start wearing glasses?"
"Oh."
He took them off and set them on the coffee table next to the sports magazine he'd left open.
"I just need them for reading. I guess I'm not the twin you'd expect to see in glasses, huh?"
My lips twitched upward. "I guess not. But I like them." Had his neck just turned a tad red? He gestured toward the kitchen.
"Do you need anything? I can get you something to drink."
I shook my head. "No, that's all right, thank you. Just give me a second." He watched me gather myself. His gaze skimmed briefly down my body, over the bare skin above the neck of my blouse, the curves it accentuated beneath. The skirt I'd picked was riding just a few inches up my thighs from my knees. He schooled his eyes upward a moment later, but his Adam's apple bobbed. He'd noticed. But the efforts I'd gone to felt suddenly horrible. I didn't want to try to tempt him into anything he wouldn't have done if he were thinking clearly. I wasn't here to trick him. The guy sitting across from me was my friend, one of my closest friends. Before anything else, he deserved honesty. I tugged my skirt closer to my knees. "The information you found," I said. I figured out what it was for. It's hard to explain. I guess you could say my marriage was being planned as a trap. So obviously I'm not getting married anymore. Seth's face darkened.
"Your fiancé was in on this too?"
"He had to be. I don't know exactly how much or why." I made a jerking motion with my hand. "It doesn't matter."
"How are you going to handle it?"
"I still have to figure that out," I admitted. "I think I need to get proof. Maybe go back to the house and take that notebook. But that's not why I'm here." Snuff my spark, this was the hard part. Maybe I should go back to that whole seduction scheme. It suddenly sounded a whole lot simpler. I squared my shoulders, bracing myself. "There's something I need to know, and to find out, I need to, kiss someone. Possibly do a little more than kissing, too. Not too much." Arg, that had come out even worse than I'd feared. Was there a crack in the floor I could disappear into for the next century or so? Seth's mouth had fallen open. He snapped it shut, but he didn't seem to know what to say to that. I bit my lip. "I got the impression that maybe you might be up for that. And I definitely wouldn't mind. That is, I'm definitely attracted to you, so I figured it would probably..." I groaned in frustration and dropped my face into my hands. "I'm sorry," I said, partly muffled. "This conversation went a lot more smoothly when I only had to picture it in my head." Seth laughed, and I thought I heard a little of the tension leave him with that sound. Maybe honesty had been the right call after all.
"It's okay,"
he said.
I didn't expect... well...
He stopped and sucked in a breath.
"I don't totally understand. You can't tell me what it is you're trying to find out with this experiment?"
"I don't know if I could explain it properly." I raised my head tentatively. "But if it works, maybe I could show you." He nodded. His expression turned serious again.
"Why me?"
he said.
"You know any of the other guys, they'd jump at the offer."
Would they? Maybe I did know that. Kyler hadn't made an indication he wanted to repeat that kiss, but then, the last time I'd seen him, I'd also still been engaged and committed to that partnership. And Jin seemed up for just about anything. But there was a reason I'd come here, with this request and not to either of them. I'm not totally sure what I'm doing, I said. I know in theory, of course, believe me, I have plenty of theory, but in actual reality, not so much. I know I can trust that if I get too caught up, you'll be looking out for me at least as much as I should be. Probably more, knowing you. The intentness of Seth's gaze sent a warm tingling over my skin. Yeah, getting carried away might be a real problem tonight.
Clothes stay on?
He suggested. His voice gone rough, and somehow that made the suggestion the sexiest thing I'd ever heard, even though it was a restriction rather than a proposition. That sounds like a good line to draw, I said, suddenly breathless. I had to remember why I was doing this. Seth just looked at me for a moment longer. My face started to heat. He held out his hand.
Come here.
I scooted across the sofa to him, my heart beating so fast I was scared it was going to shatter. What if this didn't work? What if it did? Seth touched the side of my face. So close now, the heady smell of him, like sun-warmed bronze, washed over me. I had the sudden urge to lean in and lick my tongue up his neck, to see if he tasted that way too. To find out what sound he'd make if I tried it. Heat spiked low in my belly, just at the thought.
You're sure?
He said, the question sounding almost pained, but I knew if I said no, he'd move away, no matter how much he wanted this. Thankfully, I didn't have to. Completely. I said, and tipped my head to offer him better access to my lips. Seth's fingers tensed against my cheek. Then he leaned in and pressed his mouth to mine. Kissing Seth was nothing at all like kissing his twin, maybe in part because I'd let him take the lead rather than catching him by surprise. But everything about the kiss was utterly Seth. Firm and yet gentle. Strength radiating from his body as his arm slid around me with the utmost care. I pulled myself even closer, my legs sprawling across his lap. His breath stuttered against my mouth. He kissed me again, harder but somehow still tender. Every inch of my skin, every nerve running beneath it, felt as if it were glowing with pleasure. And deep in the center of my chest, that flickering sensation I'd felt with Kai sparked into being again. Exhilaration rushed through me. My spark, it was lit. I wasn't letting it stop at that small burst of light this time. I wanted more. I looped my arm around Seth's neck. My other hand gripped the sleeve of his shirt. He adjusted the pressure of his mouth, softly encouraging, asking for entrance rather than insisting on it the way Derek had. My lips parted to deepen the kiss, and the spark inside me flared brighter. Seth's fingers traced up and down my side, trailing heat in their wake. I let my tongue slip between his lips tentatively. His teased out to meet it. They tangled together until I felt as if I were trying to devour him, or maybe him me, or both at the same time. Either way, I was happy to be along for the ride. The flare inside me danced higher, but it still wasn't enough. I wasn't halfway sated. I twisted my body toward Seth's caressing fingers, letting them graze my breast. His chest hitched. As we kept kissing, his hand shifted to cup my breast completely. His thumb stroked over the side, sending shivers of pleasure through my sensitive flesh. Then it reached right up to the tip. My nipple pebbled under the flick of his thumb. I whimpered, kissing him again, pressing into his touch. Seth groaned.
"Rose,"
he murmured. That one syllable so full of joy and longing it sent an answering wave of emotion through my body. The flame danced inside me, its power vibrating in time with the thump of my pulse. And just like that, I knew, as well as I knew how to walk or speak, that it was there for me to use. I drew back from Seth just slightly, my breath still ragged, and made a small flick of my fingers. A soft glow burst above my palm, shining and dancing like the spark inside me. Seth stared at the conjured glow, his face softening with awe.
What is that?
My lips curled into a giddy smile. It's magic.
16. Rose. If you'd glanced into our breakfast room any given morning, the four of us would probably have looked like a happy family. Dad and Celestine on one side of the elmwood table, Derek and I on the other, fine china all around and the scents of buttery rolls and herbed scrambled eggs filling the air. Of course, if you'd stopped to watch a little longer, you'd notice that not a whole lot of talking went on during those breakfasts. Derek would remark on the weather and the food, and I would say something agreeable in return. Dad and Celestine might briefly discuss some business around the estate, but mostly we just ate in our own little bubbles. The morning after I'd snuck out to see Seth, my bubble felt particularly close to bursting. The glow of my spark had already almost entirely died out. Until it was fully kindled by a consort ceremony, any magic that sparked inside me would seep right back out of me, like water through a sieve. But a glimmer of that power still danced in the middle of my chest. A glimmer that had been kindled by an unsparked, non-witching man. How was that even possible? It went against everything I'd been taught. Not a single historical or modern witching record I'd read had mentioned such a thing. Of course, it could be that this glimpse of magic was deceptive. Maybe affection between a witch and an unsparked man could bring a brief flicker, but never more than that. Never a proper consorting. There wasn't any way, or any one, I could easily ask. Imagine all the questions they'd start asking me if I brought up the subject. More distracting, though, were the questions I still had about two of the three people I was dining with, and the schemes they were making against me. As I chewed and swallowed my eggs and toast, I tasted only blandness. "Pass the salt," I said on autopilot. "Of course," Celestine said with a glitter in her eyes. She swiveled her wrist, and the salt shaker sailed along the table to drop in front of me. My back tensed. A little show of her power. For me? To remind me that she still held the magic here, I guessed? Little did she know. I scooped up another forkful of egg and studied my stepmother and my fiancé. Just how allied were they in this binding Celestine was planning? Could I catch any sign of their secret understanding? So far, I still hadn't seen a hint of it. Derek smiled at Celestine when she offered him the cream for his coffee, but he smiled at everyone like that. Me, my dad, the server who brought a fresh pot of coffee, that cleaning staff girl, Polly, who was gathering dishes as they were cleared of food. They didn't say anything to each other, except when Derek mentioned a music festival a few towns over he was thinking of taking me to, and my stepmother made a comment on the best route there. I watched the morning light gleaming off my once fiancé's bright hair, and my heart squeezed. Was there any chance he could be even slightly absolved in this? I might not have ever been thrilled about the idea of marrying him, but he'd never seemed outright cruel. Celestine was unshakable, I knew that. But if there was any appeal I could make to convince him to turn on her... I turned back to my plate. By this evening, I might have enough proof to go to Dad on my own. Better to focus on that.
"It'll just be 4 days, and then I'll be here right through the wedding,"
Dad was saying. I realized I'd tuned out the conversation. 4 days? I repeated. He gave me an amused smile. I could almost hear him teasing, like he'd used to when I was a lot younger than now.
"Off in your own world again, my little lamb. On Thursday, I have to go to Cairo on business. I wished the timing hadn't worked out that way, but..."
He spread his hands. My stomach tightened. So, if I didn't come up with the proof in the next 2 days, I'd have to wait almost another week before I could turn to Dad. I couldn't retrieve my proof any earlier. Damon was the one who could get into Master Cortland's house, and Damon had curtly informed me that he was busy with actual work until late today. I gulped down the rest of my breakfast without tasting it at all. Derek got up when I did. He caught up with me as I wandered toward the doors to the back garden. He slung his arm around me with a proprietary confidence that set my nerves on edge. It took all my willpower to stop my back from noticeably stiffening. I might be willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, but that didn't mean I wanted to get cozy. Not ever again. Whatever Celestine was planning, he had to be mixed up in it somehow.
Off on another of your walks?
He asked. Some fresh air and pretty scenery always seems like a good way to start off the day, I said. I didn't want him to offer to join me. Or maybe I did, so I could try to pry for proof in other ways. My stomach twisted, my emotions torn. Derek let go of me, and what I felt then was definitely relief.
I have a few work things to catch up on, he said. But don't forget, this afternoon we're supposed to decide on... what is it? The tablecloths, the name card designs, and then perhaps I can challenge you to another game of chess.
Perhaps this time I'll win, I said with a laugh I had to force. I breathed easier the second I put a door between us and ventured into the gardens. The moment I could feel safe dropping this charade, and seeing the back of him, the happier I'd be. Ugh, Philomena said with a shudder, appearing beside me. She was carrying a dainty parasol that she was enjoying twirling, more than she was actually using it to keep any sun off her head. Good riddance to him. My feet carried me on into the woods. As the trees closed around me, the rustling of the brush and the calls of the birds covering any sounds from the house behind me, my nerves settled more. I needed to be settled. Settled and calm and ready for whatever came at me. I wasn't exactly surprised to find myself approaching the old towers hidden deep in the estate grounds. The deeper stillness around them drew me right up to their vine-draped stones. I dragged in the scents of fresh earth and newly grown leaves. The spark inside me flickered again. Just a tiny sliver of magic left. If I didn't use it, it'd fade by the end of the hour. Without really thinking about it, I let my body move into the forms I'd drawn with my body the last time I'd been here. A call to the one still not with us. Gabriel would have known what to do if he'd been here, wouldn't he? He'd always been unshakable. Was he even still carrying the torn page I'd given him more than a decade ago? It probably hadn't been half as significant to him as it had been to me. It wasn't as if I could have told him how I'd hoped it would keep me connected to him. I wasn't even completely sure how it would work now. But I reached out to that snippet of story I'd given him, sending my last glint of magic into the air, to wherever he might be. As the glimmer left me, my chest went fully dark, the way it had always been, until last night. Other than that incredibly brief moment with Kyler, but now I felt the hollowness, so much more sharply. Philomena watched me from the edge of the glade, rotating her parasol slowly and giving me my space. I didn't really want to head back to the house yet. Idly, I brushed at the lichen that had covered the etchings on the stones. So many glyphs carved here. What had this symbolic gate been used for before it had been abandoned? The etchings I uncovered twined glyphs for connection and communication, defense and loyalty. Then my fingers stumbled over a patch of stone that had been crudely scratched. I paused, my forehead furrowing. "What's wrong?" Phil asked. I traced the bits of stronger lines I could make out where other symbols had been carved. "It looks like someone purposely gouged out some of the carvings," I said. "Destroyed them." Phil's eyebrows shot up. "Why on earth would anyone do that? Is this heap of rock really that important?" "It's more than a heap of rock," I said, rolling my eyes at her. "I think it must have been used for some magical purpose a long time ago." "A very long time ago," Phil put in. I tugged aside the vines, ducking under branches to get at more of the stones. Farther around the first tower, I found a few more etchings that had been scratched out. Someone had gone to a lot of work to hide part of this structure's meaning. My gaze rose to the crumbling peaks of the towers. They stood about 10 feet tall. I'd climbed higher than that in trees as a kid. Before I could second-guess the impulse, I grasped onto the lower branches of one of the trees that surrounded the tower. My muscles twinged from lack of practice as I hauled myself upward. But I managed to scramble from one branch to the next. The trunk was just narrowing to the point that I was getting a little nervous when I reached the tower's ragged top.
"I hope you don't mind if I just wait down here," Philomena called after me. "I think tree climbing is a little more excitement than I'm up for today. I am wearing one of my favorite dresses, after all."
"All of your dresses are your favorites," I reminded her.
"Well, that's the only way to properly live one's life, isn't it?"
"That's fine," I said. "I'm not even sure I should be doing this." I peered over the rough stones. The tower wasn't just an empty cylinder. A set of narrow stone steps wound down the inside in a spiral, down to a soil-strewn floor, mostly swallowed by shadow. The lines of more etchings caught sunlight and shadow along the walls all the way down. All of them appeared whole. Whoever had scraped away the ones outside hadn't made it this far, or hadn't realized they'd need to.
"Well, what's up there, then?"
Philomena's voice followed me.
"I might not want to climb trees, but that doesn't mean I'm not curious."
The corners of my mouth curled up.
"There are stairs inside. I'm going in."
I swung one leg and then the other over the crumbling stones at the top and found my balance on the steps. The air felt a few degrees cooler, simply easing inside that darker space. I edged down just far enough to make out the carvings here.
"Still alive?"
Phil inquired.
"Yup,"
I called back.
"Nothing too exciting yet, just more etchings."
These ones weren't all glyphs. A few, like the ones below, were scattered across the stones, along with others I hadn't seen on the outside. Passion and power, trust and loyalty, openness and cohesion. How did those two even work together? But the rest of the etched images were closer to pictures, though rough ones. Figures standing with arms raised or held out to each other or linked by the hands. Most of them were pairs, with a flame carved inside one's chest. My heart leapt. These were pictures of consorting, witches and their partners, but then... My gaze stuck on one image that showed a woman with a flame filling her entire chest. Not one, but three other figures stood around her, reaching toward her in the start of an embrace. I stared at it, my breath catching in my throat.
"Oh, what?"
Philomena said.
"Don't leave me dying with anticipation down here, Rose."
There are pictures of consorts, I think. But some of them..."
"Some of them what?"
"Some of the witches appear to have more than one. Consort, that is." If that etching in front of me was meant to represent one woman with three consorts, no wonder her spark flared so brightly. But taking more than one consort would never be allowed, if it even worked that way. There were only so many witching families, only so many witching men. If some witches had taken multiple partners, too many others would be left without, and once you'd bound your spark to one consort, no other man could light it, even a flicker. "My goodness," Phil said. "That sounds rather exciting." "Well, they're not doing anything in the pictures, if that's what you're thinking." "Hmm. That is a bit of a shame." I stared at the etching. Who had carved this? And when? I didn't remember ever reading a story, even one of those questionable folk tales, where a witch took additional consorts. Could you bind your spark to more than one man simultaneously? That picture wasn't the only odd one, either. As my gaze darted down, I spotted another that showed a woman with two consorts, a second with three, one with four. And was that witch surrounded by seven? Holy spark! I couldn't imagine how anyone could keep up with that number of partners. But at the same time, a tingling warmth crept through me, pooling at the base of my belly. Even if I couldn't imagine it, something about the idea did feel rather appealing. Time seemed to have stilled around me with the air and the sounds of the forest. I was only broken out of that dazed reverie by the crunch of footsteps somewhere beyond the tower walls. Real footsteps. Not Philomena getting restless. My pulse stuttered. Bracing my hands against the gritty stone, I eased up to peek over the top of the tower. A man was walking through the woods, circling the towers and the arch between them. Tall and gangly, with hair not quite as dark a chestnut as my father's and a face much more sallow. Oh, it was Douglas, Celestine's assistant. Normally he acted as her ambassador of sorts, going off to meet with clients when she couldn't be bothered to. What was he doing prowling around in the woods? And why here? He almost looked as if he were specifically checking for any signs of recent trespassing. A scrap of rock broke free under my clutching fingers and slipped from my grasp. It tumbled onto the stairs with a soft rattling. Douglas's head jerked up, and I yanked mine down. I held there, lungs clenched, praying he hadn't seen me.
"Hello?"
he called. When I didn't answer, he let out a huff of breath.
"Damn squirrels."
I didn't move again until the sound of his footsteps had retreated beyond my hearing.
17. Rose. Damon was waiting in the thin evening light by one of the last houses at the edge of town. When he saw me coming, he flicked the glowing butt of his cigarette into the gutter. He didn't say anything, just lifted his shoulder in a let's-go gesture, and started walking down the country road that passed Master Cortland's property about 5 minutes outside town. I fell into step behind him on the narrow shoulder. A hint of nicotine smell wafted off him, mingling with the battered leather scent of his ever-present jacket. The gravel rattled under our feet. I shrugged my own jacket, thin and cotton, tighter around me against the cool dampness of the breeze. The other guys were waiting to meet up with us after, but we'd figured for a quick in-and-out mission. It didn't make sense for everyone to come. I felt a little awkward just walking in silence and looking at Damon's leather-clad back. I weighed my words, wondering how to start a conversation without hitting on a sore spot accidentally. "You said you were working today," I went with finally. "What kind of work are you doing these days?" Damon made a scoffing sound.
"Not anything you'd approve of, Angel."
The nickname should have been sweet, but the way he said it made it sound like an insult. I glowered at his back. "I don't think you know what I'd approve of. You've hardly talked to me at all since I've gotten back."
"How much do you really think we have in common to talk about? You're off in that big house with everyone catering to you. Most of us don't have lives like that."
"I know," I said. Even I didn't exactly have a life like that, but I wasn't going to argue that mine hadn't been a lot easier than Damon's. That doesn't mean I don't want to hear what you've been through. He kicked at a larger pebble.
"Which part? Watching my mom get beaten down trying to find work so she could put food on the table for me? Getting kicked out of school? Fencing stolen goods to make ends meet?"
"All of it, I guess." My curiosity was stirred now. "Is that what you do? Steal stuff?" He made a non-committal sound.
"You watched me pick my way past a lock yesterday, didn't you? Some of us don't have a whole lot of choices. We do what we have to."
I wouldn't have pictured the boy I'd grown up with considering stealing his only option. "Who do you steal from?" I couldn't help asking.
"Don't worry,"
he said.
"I'm not casing your joint. I don't even do most of the actual stealing. There's a guy who brings stuff to a warehouse and I help with the distribution, I guess you could say. But maybe if I make a good enough impression, I can move up. Get out of this freaking town. Get my mom out, too."
He put on this whole show of not caring what anyone thought, but he clearly cared about her. And he must have cared at least a little about me, or he wouldn't have been here doing this favor. "I am sorry," I said, "for how things went after we left for Portland. Your mom deserved better than that."
"Yeah,"
Damon muttered.
"She did."
Then, after a pause, he added,
"I know you didn't have anything to do with that."
Just hearing him admit it felt like a major victory. I drew up beside him as we reached Master Cortland's property. It was easy enough to hop chain link. Damon landed first and offered me his hand, but I ignored it and jumped down on my own. The corner of his lips quirked up.
"Still don't like to admit you could use a hand, huh?"
I raised my eyebrows at him. Look who's talking. That shut him up as we crossed the yard to the back door. He pulled out the metal picks from the cloth case he was carrying and knelt down by the keyhole.
"You don't really need to be here, you know,"
he said as he adjusted the rods. His eyes narrowed with concentration.
"No point in you getting the heat if we get caught."
"You're only here because of me," I said. "It'd hardly be fair if you got in trouble and I didn't. I can take responsibility for my decisions, even if my family doesn't seem to have the greatest track record there." I glanced around, watching for headlights along the darkening road. "Anyway, there might be something in the compartment Seth found that he didn't realize was significant, and I would." Damon hummed under his breath with what could have been agreement, or skepticism. It was hard to tell. Then the lock clicked over. He pulled the door open and swept his arm for me to enter ahead of him.
"Ladies first."
"Why, thank you," I said, with as much elegance as Philomena could have mustered, which actually wasn't that much, given her temperament. Elegance wasn't really her style. As Damon closed the door behind us, I hurried to the front hall by the staircase. Now that Seth had described it, it was easy to see the odd panel out, only half as wide as the others. I crouched down and pushed it the way he'd said. The panel popped open easily, revealing the notebook and the other books he'd mentioned. A couple of glyphs marked the inside of the door. Connection and power. If they'd been meant to keep it locked, the magic on them must have faded. I checked the other books Master Cortland had stashed with the notebook. Was he using these for research for my stepmother or some other project? I wavered and then scooped them all up. He'd noticed someone had broken in from the missing notebook, so why not take everything? "All right," I said to Damon, kicking the panel shut. "No point in hanging around. Let's get out of here." We strode back toward the door. I'd just reached the threshold when the notebook on the top of the stack burst into flames. A yelp broke from my mouth. My hands jerked, tossing the books onto the kitchen floor. They fell with a thump. The notebook hissed, its cover already disintegrating, the pages crumbling into ash. The other books had flared up, too. A sharp, smoky smell filled the room. Damon's jaw had dropped.
"No!"
I dropped down, swatting at the flames, but they were already flickering out of their own accord, leaving nothing but the burnt husk of the notebook. My proof seared away. A choked sound escaped my throat.
"What the hell?"
Damon said. I drew in a shaky breath. He had a protection on them. Master Cortland must have had a spell laid to prevent any witching items from leaving the house. A wise move, actually, when he couldn't work magic himself. A general catch-all could be laid down to last a long time, and it would prevent even him from bringing anything that would reveal us beyond that boundary, even if he were coerced somehow, destroying the evidence immediately. But the glyphs on the cupboard. I spun and checked the doorway. There they were, the same ones, faint but visible if you knew what to look for under the layers of paint. Shit. My heart stuttered. There might be an alarm connected to those protections. Come on, we've got to get out of here. Damon grabbed my arm. We bolted across the yard together.
"He's on vacation, right?"
Damon said between sharp breaths.
"That's what Mr. Brainiac said. Even if he comes racing back, he can't get here right away."
"Maybe," I said, "but Mr. Cortland might have someone local on call just in case." He had plenty at stake, too. If the assembly found out he was helping someone pervert a consort ceremony, there'd be hell to pay. We scrambled over the fence and dashed down the road toward town. We'd just reached the first proper street when laughter echoed from up ahead. Damon reacted with instincts that must have been honed from the spark only knew how many petty criminal dealings. He snatched my elbow and jerked me into the shelter of a narrow walkway between one of the houses and its garage. We pressed against the rough shingles, watching the couple go by. They looked like totally normal people, meandering along hand in hand, definitely not in a hurry to investigate a magical break-in. The panic gripping me eased off just a little. I glanced at Damon. I'm pretty sure we didn't need to hide from those two. He let out a huff of breath.
You never know. Better to get out of the way than end up handcuffed.
The space was so narrow that his chest brushed mine with that breath. His fingers were still curled around my arm, firm but not rough. The heat of his body radiated over me. I swallowed hard, and his gaze slid from the street to meet my eyes. I wasn't the only one affected by our closeness. For a moment, we just stared at each other, Damon's pupils dilating into the deep blue of his eyes. My breath was still a bit ragged from the run, and I was finding it awfully hard to catch it. We could have walked right back out there, but that would have meant pulling my gaze away from him, which felt somehow impossible. "Thank you," I said quietly, "for helping me tonight, even if it didn't work out. You didn't have to do that. You never had to do anything for me, but you did. A lot." Damon shifted, his hand trailing down my arm to my wrist. His touch sent a pleasant shiver through my nerves in its wake.
"Don't think I'm gonna roll over and play nice just because you butter me up, Angel."
I grimaced at him. "I'm not trying to butter you up. I'm just saying what I'm honestly thinking. Isn't that what you want? Honesty?" A soft, strangled noise worked its way out of his throat. He tipped his head forward, his forehead almost grazing mine, his mouth just inches from my lips.
"There's so much I fucking want, Rose,"
he murmured with a rasp. A full-out shudder of longing shot through me, but he didn't bridge that last short distance.
"More than you could handle."
"I always kept up with you before," I said. "All of you." A hint of a smile touched his lips.
"Yeah,"
he said.
"I'll give you that."
He inhaled deeply.
"I missed you too."
He pushed away from me the second the words had left his mouth, so abruptly I almost thought I'd imagined them. But I definitely wasn't imagining the flush that had colored the back of his neck above his jacket collar. He motioned for me to follow him with a jerk of his hand, not bothering to look back. I shook off the chill he'd left behind with me and hurried after him. The farther we went into town, the more my immediate fears faded. I didn't think anyone would be able to tell who had been in the house. Maybe Master Cortland would be able to make a guess if he determined why we'd been after his notebook. But that would only lead him to me, not the guys. I'd just have to deal with him when it happened. It'd be difficult for him to prove anything without revealing what I'd been trying to steal and getting himself into a heap more trouble. The other guys were waiting down the alley by the back of the Lennox hardware store. The cafe's patio was closed, but we weren't here for an extended chat anyway. The others had just wanted to be ready to act in case I needed anything else. My heart sank, seeing them waiting. I held up my hands as we came into view to show how empty they were. Seth frowned and Kyler's eyes widened. Jin straightened up off the wall he'd been leaning against and ambled to meet us.
"Not as simple as you were hoping,"
he said with a crooked smile. "No," I said. "We couldn't get the books. There was..." I trailed off, my gaze veering to meet Seth's. A fresh flicker of warmth shot through me, just remembering his hands and his mouth on me last night. He had some idea now. He hadn't pushed for answers and I hadn't offered many. But he knew I had more power than he would have once thought was possible, and that other people like me, had that power too. But I hadn't revealed that much to the other guys yet. There was a sort of trap I settled on. It wouldn't let the books leave the house. I know that sounds weird.
"Fucking weird,"
Damon muttered.
"It's okay, Rose,"
Kai said before I had to go on.
"You don't have to explain, we get it."
Jin rested his hands on my shoulders, his thumbs rubbing over the muscles there with just enough pressure to release the tension I hadn't realized was coiled inside them.
"One way didn't work,"
he said in his usual relaxed tone.
"So we move on to something else."
I didn't know what else. For a second there, all I really wanted was to lean back into him and forget all the uncertainties ahead of me. His hands moved from the base of my neck to the peaks of my shoulders and back again, the gentle caress flooding me with even more warmth. How was it possible that I wanted all of these guys so much? I wanted Damon gazing down at me like he had right before he'd told me he'd missed me. I wanted Seth's careful strength pressed up against me again. I wanted to rediscover the taste of Kyler's mouth, to stay long enough to see how his eyes would light up at my touch. It hung all around us like a hum in the air. I wanted all of them, and I could almost taste their desire echoing back at me. What was the point in trying to deny it? That was just the way it was. Maybe the way it had always been. Only our feelings had grown from childish affection to the deeper, headier emotions coursing between us now. And I didn't have the slightest idea what to do with that knowledge. I wanted them, sure, but how could I have any of them? They were unsparked, and I was a witch. A witch who still needed a fully fledged consort. I wouldn't even have the brief flares of magic they'd given me if I passed my 25th birthday without my spark properly kindled. The seed inside me would die, and leave me with nothing but that terrible hollowness. Maybe there was a chance. Maybe it could work. But how could I risk my entire magical future just to find out?
18. Kyler. A cloud streaked past the rising moon, but I didn't think I could blame that for the shadow that crossed Rose's face. For a moment, standing there between the four of us in the alley, she looked so hopeless my heart wrenched. "Mr. Cortland should be gone until after tomorrow," I blurted out. "That's the last day he had his mail held for. We could go back. Try some other way." Rose was shaking her head. "The books are... we can't take them. Consider them gone, and nothing but the actual books would have been enough proof to accuse a man of the standing Mr. Cortland has in my community." Jin's hands stilled against her back. I tried to ignore the way that simple contact ate at me. She'd kissed me. So briefly, but it had been the best fucking thing I'd ever felt in my life, and then she'd run. She'd been upset and reaching out for comfort, and afterwards she'd realized what a mistake she'd made. She looked so much more comfortable with Jin touching her than she had when she dashed for my door. I wasn't supposed to think things like that. She was still engaged, even if she meant to end it. But God, how I wished I could have believed it'd be me she'd turn to, and not every guy here before me, if she was ready to move on. "How do you think we should go on from here?" Jin asked. Rose rubbed her mouth. "I don't know. Maybe I can find out more from my stepmother or my fiancé somehow. There's got to be proof on their end somehow, or they'll slip up. Or we'll think of something else." "We'd better go our separate ways for now," Seth said, his gaze intent on her. "The longer you're out here with us..." My twin was right. The last thing Rose needed right now was to get caught running around with us, to give her stepmother ammunition against her. But just for a second, like a punch to the solar plexus, I hated him. I hated the way his words made her eyes shimmer with affection. I hated Jin for his hands now simply resting on her shoulders as if they belonged there. I hated Damon for the glance she shot his way as if his reaction mattered that much to her. But mostly, in that moment, I hated me. All the facts I had at my fingertips, all the data I'd dug up, and what good had it done her? What had I accomplished, really, that would actually help her get out of this mess we'd uncovered? I'd hacked into banks and spied on confidential mailings for her, and she was still just as trapped by her stepmother as before. As 11 years ago, when she'd been dragged away from us nearly for good. Rose nodded and sucked in a breath. She blinked, the lamp out back of the hardware store catching on a glint of moisture in her eyes. The way she was looking at us, I couldn't help thinking it was as if she believed she might not ever see us again. She moved as if to step away from Jin, but then she spun around and wrapped her arms around him. His face blanked with surprise, but only for an instant. He hugged her back, tipping his head beside hers. The squiggle of jealousy in my gut squirmed deeper. Damon started to turn away and head off. Rose detached herself from Jin and grabbed Damon's sleeve. "You'll survive this," she told him, and pulled him into an embrace. Damon's back stiffened, but his face seemed to wobble at the same time, that mask of indifference vanishing. He closed his eyes, almost reverently, and tugged her closer. Rose's hand fisted in his jacket as if she never wanted to let go. But she did. She released him, and Seth was already stepping forward to meet her. Something about the confidence with which my brother drew Rose into his arms made my throat tighten. When had he gotten so comfortable with her? I stood there awkwardly, the last of the bunch. Rose squeezed Seth's broad shoulder and then turned to me. Because, of course, she couldn't leave me out. I couldn't imagine she had an unkind bone in her body. She stepped toward me tentatively, and I extended my arms, abruptly unable to even meet her eyes. Embarrassed by how every particle of my body was jittering with eagerness at this chance to hold her, even if it meant so much more to me than it did to her. I didn't draw the hug out, just embraced her quickly and then pulled back. Rose's hand groped after me for a second, as if she'd meant to hug me even tighter. My gaze leapt to her face with a skip of my heart. Was that pain flashing through her expression? As if it had hurt her that I'd barely accepted the embrace? As if it had meant something to her more than just a token gesture? I opened my mouth, but my tongue tangled. There was no glib comment that could turn back time. "I hope I'll be seeing you all soon with better news," she said, hunching her shoulders in her jacket. Then she was slipping away between the stores before I could figure out the right words to fix my mistake, which was feeling more and more colossal by the second. A request for me to press the start button blinked on my TV. I picked up the video game controller, but the computer-generated enemies looming on the screen just made my worries niggle deeper. There were too many real enemies threatening people I cared about. I hadn't heard anything from Rose in almost 2 days. As far as I knew, neither had the other guys. At least a dozen times I'd picked up my phone, ready to just text her some mindless message like, "You okay?" and then stopped myself when I remembered the look on her face, when I'd pretty much rejected her embrace. With a groan, I flopped over on the couch. Would it really be so hard to say something, apologize, tell her I hadn't wanted to overstep, and if anything, I'd wanted to hold her too long, too tightly? What if I just imagined that hurt, though? Wishful thinking? It wouldn't be the first time. I didn't have the best track record with girls. The last thing she needed was me hassling her about when the marriage she was supposed to be planning was in the process of imploding. My gaze came to rest on the one work of art on my wall that hadn't come from anyone in this town. The little metal etching sent to me all the way from New Brunswick in Canada, from the one girl I'd had more luck than I deserved with, Marion. It had been such a cliché. We'd started talking in the middle of an online game, and somehow enjoyed each other's conversation so much we'd just kept going after we beat the boss, who, for the record, we'd completely pulverized. Chatting on our headsets had turned into video chats, and more than just chatting. I called her my girlfriend. She called me her boyfriend. I hadn't gone a day without seeing her face. We sent each other gifts like that etching on my wall. But then, in the middle of trying to plan our first trip to really meet, it had all fallen apart. "There was some other girl, wasn't there?" she'd said over Skype, which seemed like out of the blue. "You said you've never really had a girlfriend before, but there was someone." "What?" I'd said. But even in my confusion, my mind had leapt to Rose. It just did, even years after she'd left. I didn't know what had happened to her. None of my internet searching had reassured me she was okay. Of course, I couldn't completely let her go. But I hadn't lied. Rose hadn't been my girlfriend, not even close. "There are those things you never quite talk about," Marion had said. "I can see you stopping yourself and editing stuff out. It's not like I mind if you've been with other people before. I have. I just want to know you're being honest with me." "I am," I'd said. "There's nothing important. Some of the stuff from when I was younger, it's just complicated." "Too complicated to tell me about?" "I guess there are just secrets I don't feel or mind to share," I'd said. which had felt like a weak excuse even as it came out of my mouth. "Secrets you're keeping for a girl you don't see anymore?" Her expression had shuddered. "Or do you still see her?" "No," I'd protested.